Sometimes I imagine floating out in space. I'm out there. I'm looking down at this beautiful blue ball, and it looks definitely interesting. It's intriguing. And I'm flying around out there in space, looking for a place to settle. And I decide that I'm going to go check out this beautiful blue planet that I see below me. Upon entering the atmosphere of the planet, I am immediately burned to smithereens. So that doesn't work very well, does it? So let's say that I came in spirit form. I'm in some sort of spirit form. Some sort of energy ball. And I've flown down to Earth, and somehow I've flown into a human body. And then I pop out of this human body, and now I'm this little helpless creature that needs food and shelter and love and wisdom and caring and compassion and empathy. Without it, I am literally helpless. And that goes on, for some of us, into our 30s or beyond. What I'm trying to say here is that if you could imagine, just for a moment with me, an interesting little scenario, if you will, that we were some kind of a intelligence floating around in space. There's lots of other intelligences like us, lots of other spirit beings. Everybody hangs out every once in a while. You know, there's some clubs where they hang out, the spirit clubs and the spirit libraries and spirit schools and things like that. You know, just bear with me. It's just my imagination. But I got this when I was meditating the other day. Yes, I know. What was I doing thinking during meditation? No, no, no. But I was. Or who knows? Maybe something just dropped in. And what dropped in was, if you were this disembodied spirit, this disembodied intelligence, this consciousness without a body that was somehow intelligent enough to be able to understand that there might be more to this spirit life than just being everywhere at once and everything at once, but at the same time restricted by not really having the ability to be able to feel things in a physical way, to have deep emotions, and to have relationships where there is sorrow, there is love, there is wonder, and there is loss. So here we are, or here I was in this vision, and it seemed like all the other spirit beings that I knew, that I was hanging out with, everybody was talking about wanting to go to Earth, because that was the place to be. We even got to see some slideshows about it and some presentations. Some of the spirits brought out their decks, and they showed us their PowerPoint presentations up there in this other dimension or other reality or whatever it was. And we got to see these slides of this wonderful place that was filled full of abundant life. Beautiful trees and plants, mountains and rivers and deserts, fish in the sea of multicolors, just amazing vistas and views, places like the Grand Canyon, all these people busily doing things and experiencing life inside of their little bodies, their little vehicles. And all of us up there in the spirit realm wanted nothing more than to be able to come to Earth and experience life here. Because to us, as spirit form, this was heaven, Earth. This was the heavenly plane, not space, not outside the body, not somewhere up from Earth, but rather Earth itself, that this was the place that everyone wanted to be. So that drive to come here and be in this place and not having a body beforehand, we're in a great state of shock for quite a while, and we may journey this whole experience, this whole time we have here on this planet, this heavenly Earth, without ever knowing that the reason we wanted to come was because this was the place to be. This was the place that had everything to offer. Imagine we're in that spirit form, ghostly, flying around, and we're hungry, and we want chocolate, and we want to have a beer. Maybe not in that order, but or even together. That's the whole premise, that the place to be is here, and this place is the heavenly realm. And this is, an idea that I have thought about before, but this came in a really positive way during my meditation, because it put me in a place of understanding that, it's all a story, it's all in my mind, and my mind was saying, you chose to come here, you wanted to come here because this was the wonderful place to be where everything happened, and you could experience all of the things you desired outside of a physical form. In this spirit form, you desired all of these things that required having a physical body. Now, I'm not going to go into that concept that you're here for any other reason, but to just experience this place like a trip to Disneyland. You say, wow, Disneyland, it's the happiest place on earth. I know that's controversial now. And we can't wait to go. And we're really going to have a lot of fun. We're going to go on all the rides that we can. We're going to eat a lot of food that's not very good for us, but it's tasty. And we're going to see our favorite characters. And the whole family's going to be together. And we're going to have an amazing time there at Disneyland. Imagine, let's say, you got put in Disneyland when you were about 6. And that's all you knew was Disneyland. You lived there. You thought that was the only thing in the world, kind of like the Truman Show thing, but it's in Disneyland. After a while, I'm sure that you would be tired of the food, you would be tired of the rides, you would be tired of the whole thing, and you would think it was the most miserable place on earth, not the happiest place on earth. And you would begin to start looking around for other places to go, other things to experience. You would also probably create some sort of a concept that outside of Disneyland was better than Disneyland. Maybe that's a bad analogy, but I think you get what I mean. Because I think that we lose sight of just how amazing this planet is and just how amazing our life is. Even though we have suffering and pain and we are dealing with things like anxiety and trauma, that one of the things that really helps me is to remember how special this place is and to remember that it's the only place like this that we know of. And for me, there's that dopamine rush of going out into the woods, hear the desert, and Oak Creek Canyon, go up to the Grand Canyon. A lot of beautiful places here in my state of Arizona. That ability, the gift to be able to go and experience that, can be taken for granted by me. That's when it will come back to me in just such a strong way how special this place is. And hey, watch some David Attenborough stuff if you want to see how amazing this is. To me, it's absolutely mind-blowing that there are as many birds as there are in existence and how varied they are in shape, size, color, song, everything. I tell a story once that I went scuba diving in Hawaii, and I went with an instructor, and we went down pretty deep, about 110 or 20 feet down. And it was a long trip down, and it started to, at the top, you got the beautiful blue water, and it started to get darker and darker. Kept going down, we're descending down very slowly. And I get down all the way to the bottom, and it's just fine black sand everywhere. And the water is pretty dark because, the sun's having trouble reaching down to the bottom. The instructor told me before, hey, you might see these eels. They're called garden eels. And they come up from the sand, and they're several feet long. They come up to feed, and they come straight out of their holes, but they leave their tail down in the hole. And they just kind of hang out like that. They look like grass. And you'll see a whole bunch of them, he said, but you got to go all the way down to the bottom. And he said, lay on your stomach and get as relaxed as you possibly can. Don't, skip breathing. But try to relax enough to where you're not releasing so many bubbles from your regulator. So I do that, and I'm all the way down at the bottom, and I'm waiting to see these eels. I've laid down on my stomach. I'm very still and relaxed, and I'm planted on the bottom of the ocean here, down about 110 or 20 feet, and I'm waiting for the garden eels, the grass eels, whatever they're called. I think it's garden eels. I'm waiting for them patiently. And I look down and I see this creature, you know, about 4 inches long, that is black and white striped. And it has, you know, these little protrusions that look like spikes coming out of it, but they're kind of rounded off. And they're yellow, tinted with a little bit of orange. And this creature, looking, you know, kind of like a tiny, fancy Persian rug, it just cruising along really slow right in front of my face. And I know now that it was a Hawaiian nudibranch, but I'd never seen one before. And it was another one of those moments that I'll never forget that comes back to me constantly. The awe that I experienced in that moment, and the fact that I was so far underwater and I saw something so absolutely gorgeous and beautiful and colored in such a magnificent way. This was an amazing, quote unquote, creation. I don't know who made it. I don't know how it got there. I don't know if anybody even made it. You know, let's just say it came from nudibranch land. And even when we try to pinpoint these things down in a scientific manner, this is where things break apart for me. I know we can categorize all of these things. We can measure. We can do all kinds of things to be able to understand more about the nudibranch. And we can understand, okay, so here's how it evolved. Here's how it came into being. This is what we think. Okay, that's great. And I'm not saying, oh, there's this guy on a cloud floating around and he just poof created the nudibranch. I don't know how the hell this thing was made. I'm just saying that is mind-blowing. That little creature of such a delicate design, so beautiful, down so far with nobody to really be able to admire it, was one of the most beautiful things I'd ever seen in my life. So what's my point? My point is, wow, this place is absolutely beyond description or knowing. Why would we try to go anywhere else or figure anything else out when you can go scuba diving and see a creature that is probably one of the most strange and exceptionally weird creations in the universe right in front of your very eyes? If this place was the Disneyland of the universe, imagine all of the attractions that would be on the list while you're here to experience. Millions. Not only that, I'm just not just talking about visual things that are, of course, physical, but the experience in being able to just see such beauty and such variance in that beauty and feel it emotionally, because that's what it was for me. It took my breath away when I saw this little creature. And I just stared at it. I don't know how long, because it was a slow mover. So I looked at it for a very long time. And finally, I did see some of the garden eels. They did come up for a little visitation. And I was running out of time, so I had to slowly go back up to the surface. But I took that gift away with me, and it lives in my heart. And it is a reminder of why I'm here. And is it just to experience things? That's only part of it. But the gift of being able to experience such wonder, such majesty, and such drama. This is, you know, I've said this before. You know what? Sometimes we watch a movie and we think, ugh, this movie is really bad. Why is that? And of course, some of you may know that I was an aspiring screenwriter at one time, and I wrote a screenplay. And when I did, I started to revise it, and I started to read all the books on how to write a movie. and there's a formula to movies that we like. And it's true with literally everything. And you know, Joseph Campbell talks about it. It's the hero's journey. And you can look it up. But basically, let's see, I can look it up right now. Okay, so if you Google it, the hero's journey has 12 stages. So there's the ordinary world where the hero is from, and then there's a call to adventure or a challenge, a quest. Something is proposed. So then there's the refusal of the call where the hero rejects it, doesn't want to go, fear, hesitation, or whatever. And they meet a mentor and gain confidence. So they cross this threshold, and that hero has committed to the journey. So there are a few more that go on and on about this. But the thing that's interesting about this is, you know, just about every movie you could imagine, for instance, you know, Harry Potter, all the Harry Potter movies, The Lord of the Rings, the Star Wars universe, all of these stories are the same thing. They're about a person who is called from their comfort zone to go out into the world and face their fears. What'll happen is that eventually what they're going to do is they're going to be in a position of what's called dramatic conflict. And that's what makes the story interesting, where things get really difficult for our hero or heroine. And they have to overcome every obstacle in the book to be able to move forward with their goal, whatever that is, to find the Holy Grail or to destroy the Death Star or, defeat Voldemort. It's all kind of the same thing. The challenges that we go through in that dramatic conflict in the movies as a viewer keep us on the edge of our seat when they're really, really engaging. In other words, our hero or heroine is right at the edge of giving up, right at the edge of being defeated. When they find within themselves an ability to be able to take that last final step. And then they return home with gift-bearing hands from their journey. So, what does that have to do with this world and how we fit into it? It's like this. There are a lot of people that wish on the dawning of Aquarius and the perfect world scenario that everyone will be awakened and enlightened, and then they will work to form some sort of a utopian society. There's nothing wrong with this dream. The only point is, I'm just asking all of you out there, this might get a little boring after a while. Like I was talking about how you would want to escape from Disneyland. Okay. After a while, you would have enough. So, that being said, the reason why this place is interesting is because of the pain, the suffering, the loss, the disagreements, the struggle. That makes it interesting. But for some of us, this is a bit too much. It might be too much for the person to handle on a spiritual or emotional level. And that's where our practice comes in. And that's what I'm talking about. How do we go on when we think we can't go on? How do we keep going? Why should we keep going? What difference does it make? Why shouldn't we give up? We're not in the movies. We're not Harry Potter. You know, we're not Luke Skywalker. So why? Why should we go on with this? And I think that is a really good question. And sometimes I feel just like that. It might happen at about 2 o'clock. And I do notice a pattern. And the pattern is that I might start to feel like that, but I didn't realize, like I talked about in the last podcast, that inner critic had been working at that subconscious level. And that what it was doing was, oh, I see Robert's doing some good work. How can I mess that up? So, when we're watching a movie and we're really, really involved, and we are immersed in it. We've suspended disbelief that there is such thing as a wizard and a wizarding school. Okay? And we're totally immersed. We're there. We're feeling it. We're in the shoes of the character because it's so rich. It's so good. It's so intriguing. It's just pulled us in. That's when you will forget about time while you're in the movie theater, and you are just being entertained. You're being taken on a ride. We forget, and you gotta love Bill Hicks. Look him up if you haven't heard about him before, a comedian, because he does this whole monologue on this is just a ride, and it's wonderful. And I'm with him on that. Sometimes it feels like a ride through the haunted house of horrors, but it's still a ride. And we forget that because we are so immersed in this character that we're playing here and this being so real that we don't think there's anything else but this and what's happening. And we are fully pulled down into the character. Now, let's not minimize the fact that we're real people. We're not characters. I'm just using that as a metaphor. We are people. We are in these bodies. Whether my theory is correct that we chose to be here doesn't really matter. What is real? Sometimes what is real is pain and suffering and wanting to give up and not having the strength to be able to pull ourselves up and out of it. That is a reality for many people, especially now. There is a lot of sadness and a lot of depression. And the material world that we look at and the leaders that we have, the politicians, the big corporate owners of all things, there seems to be a division there of us and them. And we may even look to them to make things right or better. And when we see that they're not focused on that, that they're focused on their political career or making more money, it's heartbreaking to us. And then we really do believe that we're alone in our pain, in our suffering, and in our inability to be able to pull ourselves up and go out there and try again. This is what I do. I remember my friend, the Nudibranch. I remember that this place here has a whole other side to it that sometimes becomes invisible to us. What becomes invisible is how beautiful and amazing it is just to be alive. You don't even need a purpose. You don't need a bunch of goals. You don't need a reason for being here. This isn't a school of the universe. You don't have to become famous. You don't have to become rich. You don't have to become anything. All you have to do is remember that this place here where we are is an amazing teacher and it's a healer. And we can go to this place, this quote-unquote mother, for healing, for understanding, and also to kind of check balances once again. In those balances that I mean, when we look out into nature and we see what it is doing and we realize that we're on a rock hurtling through space that's being held in infinite blackness, we can see that this thing is pretty special and it's not separate from us. We're part of it. We're part of this creation. We're part of the wonder of it all. We're part of the mystery of it all, riding in on stardust to this place. And here we are. When we know we don't really have to be anything or become anything special, that we can just be who we are, that we can have our own genuine feelings, that we can have our own truth, and that we can rely on the fact that we can count on things to change. Eventually, it's not going to feel that way anymore. And I'm not one of those that tells anybody to, you know, snap out of it. That is total BS. What I'm talking about is knowing that things around you, you can be called upon. You can actually go out into nature and call upon it to help you, to balance you, to ground you. And that practice of meditation or mindful walking on the earth is another way to be able to minimize the noise that's in the mind. minimize the critic, minimize the monkey mind. And in doing that, there is a way for us to be able to do our reset. And the reset for me is daily. I have to do it every day. It's just an everyday occurrence with me to sit down here at my little altar and do my breathing exercises and find that place where really what's happening is my mind is just resting. It's shut off for a little while. Anyway, not the whole mind, but the yappy part gets shut down long enough for me to be able to experience something beyond mind. And having that little taste throughout the day can really help us when we have got to a point of where we don't feel like that we want to go on. That, I know from experience, is a lousy, lousy place to be. We can't minimize that. We can't minimize our feelings. We can't bypass the emotions that are coming up. This is all, it's all part of the process. Anyone that's meditated for a long time will go through this experience where they have gone into bliss and samadhi and union with the whole universe and into metaphysical experiences, being able to travel through time, levitate and all this stuff. And then finally you realize that's all just more mind stuff. And you decide to go beyond that. And going beyond that, you're just resting. Your mind is just quiet. It's just resting. And that's a wonderful place to be for many reasons. It's a healing place to be. It's also a place to absorb wisdom. We talked about this in the Headless Buddha Boy episode. We've talked about it many times before. Why do I keep talking about it? Because that's what I'm pointing to with the podcast. That beyond all of that mental noise, which includes all quote-unquote spiritual experiences, and you know that means mind too, that all those get dropped along the way, and there can be an experience of no self, that we don't even exist, we never existed, and we float around in that for a while. I did. I float around in the no self for a while. And then there might be that journey back, like I talked about in the hero's journey. And that's kind of the meditation journey, is that you have responded to the call, you find your mentors and teachers, you go out there, you get through the challenges and the hard parts of having to sit there in pain and sit there with your mind just going, and then going into places where you're just remembering, you know, the color of your roller skates when you were 3 years old. And this just goes on and on and on until you finally kind of funnel it down. Oh, now you're having amazing spiritual experiences with the Buddha and Jesus, and everyone's coming to visit you, and the angels are seeing through you, and all these things happen, and you're manifesting all that you desire. You go past that point. You go past the bliss, the immersion in the nothing, and come out the other side, back into Robert with a head, not the Headless Buddha Boy, with a head. And this is kind of like a death. It can be pretty rough. It was for me, where what I realized was that reaching these places in my experience of meditation, that wasn't going to make everything okay. That I had to come back and work with all of my emotional baggage. Now that I had the grounding to be able to face that stuff, I had to work through that. So that's another part of this journey. But there is a point where we can break free from our mind to a point of where we can experience the simple sea slugs of the world. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoy the podcast. You want to send me an email, it's aquietmind@gmail.com. Thank you.